We are on a mission to help lawyers and law firm owners maximize wealth and achieve financial independence. Welcome to The Lawyer Millionaire with Darren Wirtz from Wirtz Financial Services. In this podcast, we will help you build wealth, minimize your taxes, and plan for retirement with money management strategies designed for the legal profession. Join us in this journey where we help you manage your money so you can make the most of your future. Start feeling confident in knowing you are well prepared for retirement and on track to financial independence. Now onto the show.
What if you could double your law firm's revenue while working less and delivering better client experiences? Sounds like a dream, right? Well, the secret lies in the place where law meets innovation. Welcome, friends, to another episode of the Lawyer Millionaire Podcast, a show dedicated to enabling law firm owners to create extraordinary wealth and secure their financial legacy. I'm your host, Darren Wirtz, financial planner for law firm owners. Today, we're unearthing these hidden paths to success with a true pioneer in the legal industry. Our guest today is Alan Rodriguez. Alan is a legal product development strategist. Had to get that right. That's a mouthful.
It is.
Who's been serving the legal industry for over 20 years. He was the director of attorney services at LegalZoom, where he helped the company move from a provider of do-it-yourself legal services to comprehensive legal solutions working with attorneys. And he's here to share all kinds of great advice and insight with us. Alan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Darren. I'm really excited to be here on your podcast. I think it's really great content. Looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. I'm excited that you're here as well. Podcasting from your amazing office in your backyard. You were telling me about that. That's really, really cool. Well, let's get into some of the work that you do. I find it really fascinating. How would you, first of all, describe yourself and your mission? Because I've looked at the work you do and it's so well aligned. And I want to give you the opportunity to describe it in your own words.
I appreciate it. So the work I do, it's all focused on the legal industry. So I'm a business professional in the legal industry like you. I'm not a lawyer, but I've been serving the industry for over 20 years. And I've got my hands in a couple of projects. And so three of them. One, I own a law firm, Singular Law Group in Arizona. Under the new Arizona ABS rules, they allow non-attorney ownership. So I threw my hat in the ring and I own a law firm there. I also help law firms and legal tech companies build products to better serve consumers and small businesses. That agency is 1-400. There, we're a full suite of services, product development, marketing, web development, technology adoption, so that law firms can automate more. And then finally, I'm also a SaaS owner. I own a legal services product called Simple Client. I acquired that business last year, rebranded it, and redeployed it to allow law firms to, again, automate more of their work, make it easier for consumers to engage them, and like your mission, to help them create wealth. For me, one slight modification, I think if we can help more lawyers earn more money, but doing it in a way that improves access to justice, then we create a win-win for everybody. And so that's what really drives all the projects that I work on, is an underlying desire to help increase access to justice.
Yeah, I sense that in seeing the projects you've been involved in. The theme that I see running through all of that is helping more people have access to legal services. Maybe populations or groups of people who traditionally haven't been able to avail themselves of legal help.
Yeah, 100%. And in fact, in our country, that's 80 million people, right? So that's,
wow.
When you think of it from a business perspective, right, that's a lot of potential customers out there. And so if we can crack that nut, if we can create that business model, build that product, right, that services the needs of those people, and let's say we can get $5 out of each and every one of them, that's a business worth running, in my opinion. So you know, it's not all just, touchy-feely, right? Like, not a desire to, like, you know, feel good about it, but, like, we can make money doing it too.
Right. Great point there. Well, tell us about your background and how you became involved in the legal industry in the first place.
Yeah. So right out of college, I had law school dreams like many people. And my first job right out of college was at the LA County Bar Association. And it was a great first gig because they also offered a scholarship to law school. And it gave me a chance to work in the industry and meet lawyers. And I met some really great lawyers. And they gave me this bit of advice when I was young. They were like, hey, before you go to law school, maybe you should come shadow me at my office. I'll, you know, come work for me for a week, right? You know, and so you can get a real sense for what the job requires. And then you can make a more informed decision about going into law school. And these were guys that were sincere. They were like, hey, look, I love being a lawyer, but I didn't always. Or some of them were like, you know, the career is often sold at like on TV, like the shows Law and Order or Suits, you know, stuff like that, right? And it was like, the job isn't really like that. So I did. And it turns out like some of the things I observed there were like high alcoholism, drug use, high divorce rates, all that. It was like a very stressful job. It's a job that requires perfection. I mean, detailed administrative work. And it was less Suits, right? Less Law and Order and more like just admin. And I realized like, hey, you know what? I think I enjoy the business of law better. And so that set me on a different trajectory. I ran the LA County Bar Lawyer Referral and Information Service. This was in the late 90s, early 2000s when technology was just coming on the scene. And I had an opportunity to just use email or use like operational workflow improvements and change the way the referral service was doing business. And we went from like 500,000 in revenue to 2 million in revenue. Right. And that really kind of inspired me. It was like, hey, you know, we can just tweak systems and processes and use technology and we can make a lot more money doing it. And so from there, I got recruited into LegalZoom, was able to do a lot of the same, this time creating products for law firms, caught the bug, just kind of seeing the impact that this has on, you know, people, small businesses, consumers, and the money that people can make. I mean, LegalZoom's valued at $2 billion now, right? Yeah. So approximately $2 billion. So I caught the bug, formed my own agency, 1-400, where I said, you know what? Lawyers have always had the ability to do these sorts of things. They've just not been shown how, or they've chosen not to. Right. And I said, you know, that's going to be my business. That's going to be my stake in the ground. And I'm going to be part of teaching them how, you know, and so being on podcasts like this is like part of that mission. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Ellen, you're not the typical law firm owner. And some people may find that controversial, but tell us about this rule change in Arizona, how your business model works, and why it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, and you're spot on. Lots of lawyers hate this concept. But I think what the state of Arizona has decided, they were like, hey, look, we've got this access to justice problem that isn't being solved by our current legal industry, right? Like, we have 1.3 million lawyers in America. That's approximately one lawyer for every 330 people. But yet, 80 million still go either underserved or no service at all. And so the thought was like, could we align a law firm with, give them business acumen, right? Like give them the business leadership, technological resources that they need to scale and change their business models, and then always have lawyers kind of driving the fulfillment. And so that's the idea behind ABS. So I have a partner. His name is Scott Griffiths. He's a very talented lawyer. I stay in my lane. I'm not qualified to give legal advice. I'm not interested in giving anybody legal advice. What I'm interested in is making sure that Scott is only working strategically and not wasting his time on admin or follow-up or like all that stuff, right? And so that's why it works. You know, that's the argument. Like,
yeah,
lawyers had thought like, well, if you align with business people, you know, the ethics may become questionable because like they're only chasing profit. And I don't agree. What I'm chasing is happy customers. I'm chasing better business. And if I do anything shady or unethical, like that's just bad for business.
Yeah.
You know,
you could say that there are already law firms, you know, in the minority, of course, but that operate in that way, maybe, and that shouldn't. So that's not going to be a new thing coming to the legal industry, just by maybe bridging law and business together.
Yeah, that's it. And so, like, you know, how this works at Singular Law, like, we have this thing that we just do. It's like lawyer on demand, you know, and you can get access to a lawyer for $99. I mean, essentially, this is just selling a consultation, say, right? Like, lots of firms do this. So this isn't very innovative. But the way we market it and we sell it, lawyer on demand, we use technology to allow somebody to just buy the thing, you know, online, kind of like e-com. And so Scott is just, you know, focused on delivering like high value quality legal advice. But like Scott didn't have it in his mind to think that way, because when he became a lawyer, you know, he just learned, he got a job at a law firm, and they don't do it that way. And the legal industry does not reward innovation in a lot of ways. You know, it's just like you ask the partner, like, hey, why do you guys do it this way? It's like, hey, shut up. This is the way we've always done it. Right? Like, lawyers are taught to look to the past for their answers. I mean, that's it's precedent, stare decisis. But like innovation happens in the future. So there's kind of a disconnect there. And I think that's what I try to bring to, you know, to the relationship in the law firm. And that's kind of why it's working now.
Yeah. So this is more like, you're not replacing the lawyer. This is more like a collaboration with lawyers to empower the legal industry to be more effective. Would you agree with that?
That 100%. That's exactly it. The other thing Arizona did that is different than others, Arizona and Utah are the two states that have done similar things. Arizona's eliminated Rule 5.4. So getting back to this wealth creation, theme of your podcast, when a law firm, in the traditional sense, without the change in these rules, a law firm can't share fees with non-lawyers, right? And because of that, you can really only grow a law firm by debt-driven, right? So like you take out a loan for capital, things of that nature, because you can't display, you can't raise capital, you can't get a co-investor. But now with the elimination of Rule 5.4 in Arizona, like you could hire a marketing agency to work on performance so you don't come out of pocket, or you can get investment, you know, or you can get these kind of forgivable loans, these kind of creative financing that every other business outside of the legal industry has access to, right? Like they all have access to this. So it really kind of changes the way you can grow your firm. Right. By leveraging, like being credit driven rather than debt driven. Right. Capital driven rather than debt driven.
Right. Right. Interesting stuff. Well, let's get into some more law firm innovations. And I want to talk about legal subscriptions, an idea that's gaining some momentum in the industry. Can you walk us through the benefits of implementing a subscription model for law firm clients?
Yeah, happy to. The primary benefit is recurring revenue, right? So when you think about like a typical law firm revenue model is like you do some work and then you bill your time against that work. So you trade money you trade time for money, right? Mm-hmm. Under that model, what happens is like law firms have terrible cash flow because they go out, they prospect, they sell a client, they get like $2,500 deposit. $5,000 deposit, whatever, a retainer. Then they work the rest of the month to bill against that retainer. They get their time into, you know, some system, and then they send an invoice out, and then they collect their money. So they're always 30 days away from like seeing any money, right, under that model. But if you sell subscriptions or a flat fee, depending on your state, most of those fees can just go straight into your operating account immediately. And the other thing about subscriptions is you're not trading time for money, which we obviously know has a cap, right? There's only so many hours in a day. But you're trading value for money, right? Because most subscription plans give somebody access to a limited scope of service. And if they use that scope of service or not, then that's part of the benefit. It's like, you know, some people are going to use all of that limited scope. Some people are just going to like having access to it if they need it. But you get 100% of those revenues, right? So the model alone just improves your cash flow, creates recurring revenue. So you're never starting the month from zero, Yeah. When you're selling time, every month you start from zero and then you work your way to $100,000 a month, right? Here, you're starting with the base cohort of revenue from last month's subscribers minus any attrition that you might have in subsequent month.
Yeah.
So that alone, there's many other benefits that I'm happy to talk about, but that alone should be the key takeaway that your audience walks away with and launch their subscription plan tomorrow.
Sure. That's a great way of looking at it, because cash flow, I think, is one of the biggest problems that law firms have, one of their biggest headaches, I think. And I'm glad you brought the flat fee model into it as well, because they're similar in that there are different approaches to the traditional billing structure, but they make a lot of sense. And one of the things I see is that they drive efficiency as well.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, hey, today's a great day to hire a lawyer, right? Like, said no one ever, right? Like, instead, they experience some compelling event, and now they respond to an ad, a contact, or whatever, and they go back to the lawyer. Now, the lawyer then, at that moment, becomes a firefighter. They're like, and the stress, the amount of, like, you know, the demands of the client, all that stuff becomes like urgent on every matter because of that model. Because and why do people do it that way? Because lawyers are expensive, or people don't, you know, think like, hey, it's necessary to be proactive and taking care of my legal issues, that sort of thing. But when you have a subscription model, you now have like an opportunity to, like, with no increased cost, to speak with an attorney before you find yourself in a pickle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's always going to be compelling events like auto accidents, things of that nature. But like, if you're a small business, before you sign that contract, you can go to the lawyer, get that reviewed, and then find out if there are any red flags. So the lawyer moves from firefighter to more like fire inspector, right? Which is more like, hey, let me walk around. Let me make sure you got some fire extinguishers in here. Everything's looking good. Right.
Yeah.
And think about, like, just even for personally, like, that allows you to have a less stressful life, right? And more meaningful relationships with your customers, because now they have an incentive to reach out to you proactively and want to talk to you.
Right, right. So, you know, if you're a law firm owner who wants to create a subscription model, how do you do that in a way that's going to be successful? How do you sell that to your clients and set it up where it's compelling and it's, you know, people are going to sign up for it?
Yeah, of course, it depends on the practice area, but let's use, I'll try and use like a small business, you know, example, right? So right now, if a small business owner experiences some issue, say a city license was rejected, or a bank loan was rejected, or like some kind of compelling event, they go to a lawyer, they might be able to help them with that. $2,500, that's the friction. There's no ongoing relationship. You know, if you sell somebody a consultation, say you charge $150 for a consultation, or you're meeting a small business owner, you can say, hey, look, you know, there's two ways to work with us. You can pay for advice as you need it. It's $150. That's what we charge. Or for $99 a month, we'll just be your proactive partner, right? Like, in kind of working with your business on an ongoing basis. You can call me anytime. You can get documents reviewed, 10 pages or less. So all those NDAs, all those sales agreements, or the vendor contract where you're going to take your food truck, you know, you call us, you do that. And then we're going to also kind of help educate you to make sure that your documents are always ready to go. So when the next pandemic hits and PPP loans, you know, require this checklist of documents, you're ready to go, right? You know, and so, like, you now you become kind of a growth partner in that business, right? I think that's one way. Another way is to just offer sufficient, like, value for what they're paying. Now, on the consumer side, let's say you're a divorce attorney. You know, life after divorce, like, everybody's selling the divorce because that's the biggest revenue generator up front.
Yeah.
But if you look at lifetime value after a divorce, like, there's a lot of data to support that there's significant amount of lifetime value after divorce, and attorneys just leave that money on the table. For example, 40% of divorcees and widowers are going to remarry after 3 years.
Mm.
And that's just data. And so 40% of your divorce customers should be buying a prenup. Prenuptial agreement from you, 3 years after the relationship, or move away phases or modifications, all this stuff. If you put somebody on a plan for like just $29 a month for the rest of their life, right? You know, but they have access to you for any kind of issue that comes up, even if you can't handle the matter, say it's an accident, you refer it out, you get a referral fee. The point is you get paid to own the relationship with that person. Right. And you get the first bite of every apple, right? Like, you know, every new legal issue that comes your way. So, so yeah, it's just aligning value with your specific audience member and your target customer, and making sure that the value is commensurate with what they are. And the final thing I'll say on it is that Americans have 1.8 legal issues per year. So, you know, even on the consumer side, there's probably about 2 legal issues a year that every customer is going to need. And the analogy is like the AAA membership, like, you know, you get 2 free toes a year, right?
Oh, okay.
If your car went down or something, right? Like, you know, that sort of thing. So it makes sense in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. And that's a big concern that a lot of, you know, law firms and lawyers have about that is, you know, how do people make these things be successful? And you did a great job of elaborating on that. And speaking of the divorce thing, one thing I was thinking of that came to mind is updating your estate plan. I mean, all of those documents 100%. Need to be changed, and there's a lot that goes with that. Well, in addition to subscription models is one way to drive growth, what are some other top 2 or 3 strategies for law firm owners to focus on in today's world to help drive sustainable growth for their firms?
Thinking of their services as products, right? And what I mean by that is by, you know, looking at all the things that you do and say, what parts of these can be commoditized and then driven by software? Because I do think the future of law is an amalgam. The future law firm is an amalgam of software and service. I'll give you an example. Again, small business example. I see attorneys charge like $2,500 for business formation all the time. I could form an LLC in California at the California Secretary of State website for like $25 or something, right? And I'll do it in 15 minutes. So why would I pay $2,500 for an attorney? I, you know, maybe I'm a sophisticated user or consumer of legal services, so maybe I wouldn't. But here's why I go to an attorney. One, I want to first make sure I'm forming the right entity for my specific needs. Mm-hmm. So that just advice, you know, just being able to buy that is extremely valuable for me. Number two, what I really need from the attorney is an operating agreement.
Mm.
Like the LLC stuff, they could just outsource. Like there's tons of companies that'll do this white label for law firms. So they can pass the savings on to the consumer or the small business in this case, and then charge for the operating agreement. Why is the operating agreement important? Because when that partnership falls apart, business partnerships are just like, you know, family law, like divorces, right? They happen very frequently. I want an experienced business attorney who's seen how those deals fall apart that can advise me. And recently I just formed a new business and we went and got an operating agreement. I had never really thought about this before, but the question asked of us is like, hey guys, if you get divorced because you both live in community property states, how are we going to handle this?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I've been doing this for 24 years and nobody's ever asked me that. And that's brilliant. Like, yes, let's have a conversation about that. That's why I need an attorney. So attorneys should just really focus on delivering strategic value.
Mm-hmm.
All the other admin stuff, all the generation, use AI tools, use all the software for all the commoditized work. Pass those savings on to your consumer and only charge them for the high impact work.
Yeah. Yeah. Great stuff.
Yeah.
So you have an innovative business model that you've created, and you told us a little bit about that. We talked about the subscription models. Are there other examples of innovative business models you've seen successfully implemented in the legal industry?
I'm not sure how innovative they are, but I'll tell you. So I think in the last, like, I would say 10 years, since about 2008, when I was working at LegalZoom, we knew we wanted to move from a do-it-yourself product experience to a more comprehensive solution and work with attorneys. And so there were, at that time, I started recruiting, looking for some firms, and a couple of firms came our way and were like, hey, yeah, we know all the lawyers hate you, but we want to work with you guys. And they leveraged LegalZoom's like brand reach, advertising, all that sort of thing. And we were writing checks for significant amounts of money to these law firms. And these law firms went from like 3 lawyers to 80 in like a year and a half. So leveraging partnerships, strategic partnerships, right? Like, don't be scared. Like, other businesses do this all the time. But in law firms, there's always this concern. Well, you know, I get the RPC, right? The rules of professional conduct is always a concern. But like, you know how to evaluate that. You can tell if somebody's, you know, kind of acting ethically and will be a good partner. I would say don't be scared of working with the .coms, right? Like right now, my law firm has relationship with both HelloPrenup.com and Divorce.com. And, you know, my lead acquisition costs are pretty negligible because of that. Okay. You know, and yeah, and so I'm able to leverage strategic partnerships to benefit my business, right? And so I think those firms that do that, whether it be like business networking or like walking into a co-working facility and saying, hey, why don't you start offering your members my small business subscription plan, and we'll give them a discount. But every one of your members now has this added benefit. So go out there and kind of explore strategic partnerships as another channel. So not so innovative, right? But like law firms just don't do it. And they should is my point.
Right. That's a great idea. And just trying to think outside the box. What are some new ways, new avenues we can explore and work together with other people? You mentioned AI previously, and I want to touch on that. How is AI being used and adopted by law firms today? Or maybe how should it be used? Or what are some ways that law firms can start incorporating that into their business?
Sure. I'll tell you how we're using it at Singular Law. We use it daily. So we use it to help improve client communications. So we will take like an existing template of like email drip campaigns. So for example, like we'll provide somebody a consult. Maybe they convert, maybe they don't. But in 3 months, we're going to ask every person that we've interacted with to refer us to a friend or family member. And so we have like a series of drip email sequences. And so sometimes ChatGPT just helps us craft those or helps us improve those based on customer feedback, right? So we keep them new, fresh. That's one way. So it helps with marketing, I would say, social posts, things of that nature. The other way we use it to help summarize a lot of content quickly. So, you know, if any of our lawyers are having to review a lot of documents, ChatGPT is not always great at telling the truth, but it's always great at extracting information.
Okay.
And so we might pop a terms of service in there and say something like, hey, ChatGPT, I want you to review this and then look for anything related to indemnification, because that's my primary concern in this document. Highlight it in bullet point form, tell me the page, the paragraph and everything, so that way I can just laser focus on that. Pop it in there, seconds later, it's like, here you go, here's what you were looking for. And now we can put human eyes on it like very efficiently, right? And that allows us to move more volume,
right?
You know, and kind of focus on other parts of the business. The other way right now, we're working on, I'm actually building a product where it's going to do outbound calls to follow up with leads. And it's pretty crazy how far the technology's gone in just 6 months. But, you know, the AI will call. It sounds like a human. It'll make an outbound call and say, you know, hi, Darren, you had previously indicated interest in Singular Law, and I was calling up to see if you'd like to be connected with somebody.
Oh, wow.
And that person will, well, you know, maybe, but I'm kind of busy right now. So I understand there's never a convenient time for, you know, hiring a lawyer, but like it'll take me 5 minutes. Would you like for me to connect you?
Wow.
And when they say yes, then the AI will just transfer the call to my intake person and we'll book the appointment.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So there's really like I think it's just kind of imagine it, and chances are there's a solution out there.
Okay.
Already, yeah.
Great stuff. Great ideas. Well, Alan, we're coming down to the end of our time here. This has been great sharing some time with you and hearing all of your innovative ideas. A lot of great takeaways for our listeners today. I've got one more question for you. With everything that you're doing, what is your millionaire mission? Meaning, what is your big purpose behind everything you're doing? I think you shared some of that before, but maybe you can elaborate a little bit more.
Yeah, I want to live in a world where more people have access to justice. You know, I grew up in a community. I grew up in East LA, and in my community, your first access or your first interaction with the justice system was police, right? Like stopping you on the street corner. And I think in a country like ours, where we have one of the most robust legal industries in the world, where we really have some of the best lawyers in the world, we have all the tools to really kind of fix this problem. Globally, it's a 4 billion person problem. But here in America, I think if we all, like regulators, law firm owners, lawyers, technologists, if we all got together, put our brains together, I bet we can solve this problem and, you know, create that millionaire law firm too.
Absolutely.
In the process. Yeah.
Very inspiring. Well, Alan, if people want to learn more about you, where can they go?
At 1400.com. That's ONE400.com. If you'd also like to take a look at some of the other business projects I'm working on, there's singular.law, right? It's the name of the firm, Singular Law Group in Tempe, Arizona. And then finally, simpleclient.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Alan. And thank you, the listener, for joining us today. I hope you've gathered some groundbreaking insights and strategies to transform your law firm's trajectory. If you found value in our conversation today, we'd love it if you would subscribe and share this episode with your colleagues and other professionals who might benefit. And if you're so inclined, please leave a review. To delve deeper into your journey towards financial success, please visit thelawyermillionaire.com. I'm your host, Darren Wertz, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Lawyer Millionaire. Click the follow button below to be notified when new episodes become available. This content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. This content is not intended to represent investing or tax advice. Always seek the advice of a qualified investment or tax advisor with any questions you may have regarding your own financial circumstances.